is from Houston, Texas, from the Carry This Message group. I'll give you Mark. Mark H.
Good evening, family. My name is Mark Houston. I'm an alcoholic. And I was separated from alcohol the morning of October 19th of 1982 in Denver, Colorado. By God, I was asleep too. Didn't believe in. Who obviously had things for me to do. And I'm so grateful for that. My home group's the Carry This Message group in Austin, Texas. Over the years, I have been moved around a lot. Those of you who know Don Pritz, people would say, you know, oh, Don's my sponsor. And I'd say to them, well, I'm sorry to hear that. And they go, well, why are you saying that? And I said, because you're going to get sent out to carry this message and you won't be popular. Have a good day. That's the truth. I don't know. How many of you, is this your first time at Fellowship of the Spirit? Raise your hands. Okay. I want to tell you a little bit. You know, I know the guys that you have here this weekend, you know, Chris and, you know, Peter. And by the way, Doug, I'm real excited about flying tomorrow. I must have some rights about a UA or something before I get on that plane in terms of the pilot. I got to check that shit out. But many years ago in Denver, Don got the idea of he wanted to start a convention. He had done a lot of work with a whole bunch of men and women, and they got like sent out in different states, and we'd call him whining, you know. Because, you know, when you go to areas that they have their own ideas about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and many times it's not the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's not their fault because everybody in every room that says anything at any meeting, they're doing that as a result of how they've been influenced. And I feel real blessed to have the sponsorship lineage I had and the message that was delivered to me. But when you start carrying that message into some of these rooms, you're not real popular in the very rooms in which you should feel comfortable in, you know. I still laugh at our fellowship. You know, if I was an evangelical Christian and I had a well-worn big book or Bible and talked about it, I'd be popular. But in the rooms of AA, if I do that with my big book, I'm ostracized, right? Doesn't that seem a little weird to you? But anyhow, I think he got tired of all of us whining. And because I used to call him and I'd talk to him about the persecution I was enduring. He would tell me to get down off the cross. He needed the wood. And, you know, and then, you know, guys like him, you know, all the time drive you into the book, you know. And just, well, one man with this book alone and the power of God in his life, and then he'd hang up, you know. It's just, yeah. So anyhow, he started the first Fellowship of the Spirit in Colorado. And there were probably, I doubt if there are even 100 people there. The format's a little different than here. And now they're in their, like, 12th, 13th, 14th year. They're like an Aerosmith concert. They sell out in, like, 10 days. I went to many of them. And they're unlike any other convention you'll ever go to. And then, of course, over the years, they begin to, the people from this area who came back there carried this idea back and said, why don't we do it here, too? And so now they're, I know that, I've been to Big Bear Lake, California. They have one in California. They have one in Seattle. They have one in Boston. I think they have one in Maine. They started one in Louisiana. You have the one here in New York. So that's where it comes from. You know, one alcoholic carrying this message to another alcoholic. I remember when I went to Don's memorial, I knew intuitively once he developed cancer that he was going to pass. I just didn't know when, and on an intuitive level, I had an idea that I needed to go see him. So I flew up and I spent some time with him. And you know, when you operate in the fellowship of the Spirit with an awakened spirit, time ceases when you interact with somebody that you have that kind of connection with. And I just took time to thank him. And then I went back to Texas and continued on. And then, of course, you know, he gave a talk the night before he left his body. And then he left his body. And so they buried him. But a month later, they had a memorial. So I flew into Denver, Colorado. And there were 1,000 people at that memorial. You know, this is a guy who got sober his third time in a federal penitentiary. So one person with this book. And you never know how God's going to use you. So always remember that. I also want to dedicate this talk to my good pal Joe Hawk. A lot of you, how many of you have heard his voice in the tapes before? Yeah. Joe passed away about 2 months ago. He's down in Brazil. I've already had to write inventory on him. He went in to take a nap. He fell asleep. He had a major heart attack. He didn't even wake up. Now, that's not right. You know what I'm saying? That's easy. That's Joe, column one, column two. He dies easy, you know. It's just not right. There's no drama. There's no, you know. I can just see him, you know. So, God, you know the calls. I had calls. You know, did he die drunk? Did he die this? And it's like, where are you getting your information from, God's sakes? He'd been in Brazil for about 2 years. I had been taking him back to the steps again. And, he and I did a weekend here. I'm trying to remember, I think we did that in 2003, as I recall. Wasn't two, yeah, 2003. And then I was fortunate enough to do one here with Dave F. in 2001. So it's good to be back with you all. A lot of my influences, a lot of people who have been so helpful in my sobriety have passed away. Another man, real important in my sobriety, named Big Frank from Denver. He passed away about a year and a half ago. And, you know, I told a pal of mine recently, I said, geez, all these people that were my teachers are dying. And he said, well, Mark, do you ever recall how old you are? And because I don't know about the rest of you, but most of the time I feel like I'm about 14 or 15. And, you know, although in the last 2 weeks I've had a revolutionary spiritual experience with my lumbar and sciatic, which confirms I'm not that young. Which, by the way, is one of the reasons I haven't spent more time with you here this weekend. God, what a harrowing experience. But that's another story. I'm going to talk just not very long about what it was like. I think mostly what excites me most is talking with you all about my current experience with God, with the moment, with AA, with the book, with sponsorship, because that's all that's really relevant to me. The rest of it is when I'm working with somebody and they call me with some drama about the past, I like to do this with them. I said, okay, let me make sure I understand this. When did that take place? Well, 3 years ago. So really what that is you're sitting in a theater playing an old movie. It has no relevancy except what you give it. Is that what, and you and I are talking about this now. Is that what I'm hearing here? They go, well, I never thought of it like that. No, Well, that's what it's all about. You know, what I'm most excited is about right here, right now. Am I present? Am I current? Am I alive? Do I have passion? Do I have power? You know, do I understand how blessed I am to have a body that moves and walks and talks and eyes that see and pals in my life and people to love and that I can experience pain, that I can experience joy? Am I awake to all that instead of all the countless drama of, you know, all the stuff we go through in this progression when we first get sober, sound asleep, dreaming we're awake, saying things like, well, when I came to AA, like we woke up, wrote down in our day planner, well, I think what I'll do is in August of 2007, I'll go to AA. Every one of you in the room are just like me. There's a power out there through great love brought you into the rooms. And somewhere along the line introduced you to someone who had a message of depth and weight. Because I don't know anyone that comes to the Fellowship of the Spirit that's not interested in a message of depth and weight. A program of power. That's all this program is. It's not about getting sober. It's about power. Doing the work and the steps to become a hollow bone. Let the power transmit through you. Doug said it well. You know, he described to me what happens with the power. Did you hear how he came in? Wouldn't you like him to have been your friend then? My story's the same. I came to you all on October 19th of 1982, and I had brain damage, a kidney damage, and liver damage, and everything I owned you could fit in a duffel bag, and I weighed about 260 pounds, and I was bloated like a whale. and I was dying. I was very close to death. That's how I came to you, right? That's not the man who's standing up here now. I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. Was it because of anything I did? Not really. I was given a set of instructions that if I would follow and continue to follow and practice, my book says that God will demonstrate through me what God can do. I've got an opportunity to travel all over the world. I got a chance to write a book. I own my own business, a recovery center. The first of its kind in the United States of America in the year 2007. Fortunate enough to have 100 men come through that program from all over the country last year. Chronic relapsers, 84% of them have come through there and left there and never took a drink again. That's the kind of shit God does, you see? All I got to do, my part's easy, ladies and gentlemen. I get this big book. There's about 30 pages of instructions, none of which are too complex. And I get to take this action and become a hollow bone and let God demonstrate through me what God can do. Incredible stuff. Isn't that a little different message than showing up at a meeting, whining about whether he stayed, she stayed, whether you got the job or didn't get the job? God Almighty, what is available to us in the pages of those books, see? Circle and triangle, all three parts. At any given time over the years, I have been in one-third of a three-part program expecting the results of the other two. You only have to do that a few times. And then if you wake up about once a month, sit back and get honest with yourself. Where am I with all three parts of the program? Right? I do that with myself consistently. Why? Because wisdom is the capacity to learn from my experience. I don't need to get off track again. Right? So I also get accountable to people around that experience. You know, I took a drink of alcohol when I was 16 years old, and I drank for 20 years, and my story is contained in the pages of the big book, you know. I live in Texas, but born and raised in Iowa, second oldest of four boys, raised in a Norwegian farming community. Took that drink when I was 16. I wished I'd taken it when I was 10. I needed it. I don't know why. You know, there's a lot of words to describe the effect produced. I have spent a lot of time over the years looking at the effect produced by alcohol, and I'll tell you why. Because I put alcohol ahead of everything. And there's a reason for that, and it wasn't because it tastes good and smelled good. It's because when I take a drink of that, some real magical stuff happens that doesn't happen to normal people. And I mean magical stuff. And it gave me a sense of ease and comfort. All the 9-step promises, every single one of them came true for me when alcohol worked in my life. Not the 10-step promises, but the 9-step. You got to understand the power of alcohol. And I served alcohol for 20 years, and I'll tell you why alcohol was my master. Because it worked. If the only thing in your life that's going to give you ease and comfort, lasting ease and comfort, is alcohol, and then someone suggests that you give that up, you betcha. I mean, people wonder why we give up her over alcohol. If alcohol did for you what it did for me, that's a no-brainer decision. Have a good day, honey. There's some new vodka out I haven't tried yet. Catch you on the flip side. You may let me down, but vodka never has. See, did you ever think about that? You know, the most intimate relationship of my life was alcohol until I came to know God. Know God. I was thinking to myself when Doug was talking, I am an atheist. If you want to know what you are in the whole God deal, it's real simple. Just take the last week and ask yourself some questions. Every person in here had experienced a bunch of being an atheist in the last week. Here's what I mean. If you walked around last week and you were going through a lot of fear, it's because you're an atheist. Do you understand what I just said? If you want to know what you believe in, look at how you experience yourself. Now, if you also walked around last week with a whole bunch of fear and self-pity or whatever, you also had a lot of agnosticism going on. And that means that you don't have a personal relationship with God. It's probably a duality out there kind of a God, right? One of those sometimes where you got to get to a place. If I get to the place, I'll be okay. Jeez, I'm so glad I'm free of that. You know, it's like, you know, and then there's the believer. See, you got, I know there's some believers in here. I can tell. Your eyes are dilated a little bit, right? Yeah. See, and let me explain to you about the believers. If you're a believer and you spent much time in fear or self-pity or self-seeking or anything else in the last week, it's because you think because you believe you do. I'm immersed in the water, and the water is God, and there's never a moment in time I do not have conscious contact. Ever. The time these beady little eyes open until they close at night, I'm immersed in God. And it's not about what I believe in. It's not about what I know. See, I don't understand God. If there's any words in the big book I would change it probably, God as I understand him. I'd really love to hear from one of you your understanding about God. I think that would be funny. You know, it's like the waves are part of the ocean, right? Has all the properties of the ocean, but it's not the ocean. That's kind of like God. You're going to tell me what that, you're going to explain that to me, right? It's like Dogner Priest one day, and he wanted to tell me what was going to happen to me after I died. And I said to him, do you have any personal experience with that? He said, no. And I said, I'm not interested in your opinion, an experience you've never had. See? That's just the way I'm wired. I really am. I'm a man of experience. You know, you want to talk to me about death? Talk to me about having had the experience and what it's like. And if you can't, then it's your damn opinion. You know, one of the things I can tell you around the whole issue of fear, I guess since we're talking about that, or I'm talking about that, and you're listening to me talk about that. Over the years, I had lots of work with the middle steps. For a lot of reasons. One is I've suffered through the years intensely with depression, which I don't suffer from anymore, by the way. And I have suffered intensely with fear. I still remember Peter when God sent him to me and said, talk to this guy, right? And how encapsulated Peter was in fear, and he didn't even know it. And I know that feeling because I've been there. So all this stuff. Because I tell you, the line in the big book where it says, all my troubles are my own making. This is the kind of alky I am. I am responsible for my life. These last 2 weeks when I've got a chance to experience more pain in my lower back and sciatic than I have in all my years on the planet, I made that happen. I made that happen. Nobody did anything to me. So when I got some stuff going on, if I want to get free of it, I get into action. I don't bring it into the meetings and whine, bitch, and moan about it. Right? See, it's a program about power, and I was given a solution, but I do take it to paper because I want to get free of it. See, it's not God's fault. How do I want to get free of it? So I write inventory. And in the middle of all that, I really discovered I had only one fear. It was a fear of death, death of something. Might be the death of a relationship, might be the death of health. It might be physically dying, but at the end of the day, there's only one fear. It's the death of something. And what that translates to is the reason that I'm still afraid is because I'm afraid of the unknown. And because I don't have a relationship with God, or I may believe in God, but because I don't have conscious contact with God, I'm afraid of the unknown, so I'm back into self-reliance, and I go through life being afraid. And I hope you have the experience I do in sobriety, in recovery, emerged in your home group with a great life, still walking around, experience way too much fear, and one day you say to yourself, enough is enough. I don't think the two are supposed to exist in the same place. So you go back in, you begin to write these inventories. And they begin to my experience is exactly what the big book says, is you can outgrow fear. Matter of fact, most of the time now, the only time I experience fear is in a, I'll give you an example. When my pal Tony and I drove over here from Newark, this is just a little different than Austin, Texas, okay? Thank God for a GS system. We made more turns. It reminded me of the old days when I was dealing dope where you do 97 turns because someone's following you, right? We couldn't talk the whole hour and 15 minutes coming over because the goddamn navigator was talking the whole time. Go left, go right, move, boom, 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 right? Jesus. And now we get to drive home. Now, I had a little fear, I got to tell you, you know. Jeez, I love this one toll. There's like 97 of you, and you come down to two lanes, and it's a... I just watched NASCAR today. I felt right at home. Buckle up. Go, Tony. Go. Shit, get him. He's funny. He picked up right away. He looked. He looks over, and we need a place to pull in. He goes, oh, that guy dropped his head for a minute. Boom! We assimilate quickly. So I had a little fear. Well, who wouldn't have fear if you're from Austin, Texas, driving in where we drove today? But that's about it. I don't walk around with this At nine, between my ninth and tenth year of sobriety, my identification with my mind drove me insane. I wound up in a nut house. So in that nut house, I remember that. In that nut house, I really had my third step experience. And what I mean by that was, at that point in time, I still remember that night. I'd probably been there 2-3 weeks, and my God, I was in pain. Some of you might relate to that. It's an interior pain. It was like in every cell of my body. And I remember basically saying this to God. Here's the deal, because I think at that time I'm like almost 46 years old. And I said, I've given it my best shot drinking, 20 years. And I've given it my best shot sober. And I'm in a nut house in Houston, Texas. I don't have a job, and I don't have anything. And I said, I'll tell you what, here's the deal. From this point on, I quit. I quit. I'm going to do one thing and one thing only. I'm going to do what that book tells me to do. From this day on, I don't care where I live, where I work, who's in my life, who's not, how long I live, my health, none of it. That is your responsibility. Right? Gee, there was a strange sense of peace and ease that went over me. And I've been living my life like that ever since. And, of course, my life took off like a rocket when I was able to finally let go. See, it's easy to say the third step prayer. You guys, I'm sure, talked about it today, right? Think about this, ladies and gentlemen. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me, and you do with me as you will. Now, if you want to find out whether or not you're living that, just go back in the last year and look at the number of times that God's will showed up in your life and how often you resisted that. I'll give you examples. How many of you have had a relationship in the last year? Raise your hands. Did you resist the ending of that relationship? So you didn't mean your third step, did you? Remember, build with me, do with me as you will. If you're in a relationship and he comes home and she comes home and says, by the way, thank you, it's been fun, I'm moving on down the road, is there any other response other than God bless you, go in peace? The reason you're laughing, it's like, yes, there is. It's because you've developed what Bill talked about in emotional sobriety called a dependency. See? Learn this if you can now rather than later. Everything is on loan and you don't know for how long. It is just on loan. It is not yours. It does not define you. See? Relationship with God, first and foremost. Everything gets added to my life. You can only add to my life. There isn't a single person in my life today that can take one thing away from me. You can only add to me. And you know why? It's because I don't need anything from you. I'm just here to give to you. I need nothing from you, for I am provided for. And guess what? Now I can love like God loves. Free. I can allow you to be yourself. There isn't anybody in my life that has to change anything about themselves in order for me to love them. My God, take the last week. How many of you spent time thinking to yourself or saying to people in your life, well, if you're sober very long, you would just think this. You wouldn't say it because after all, you're spiritual now. Well, that son of a bitch would just change in this area, right? That's not love. A man named Anthony DeMello has some great books out. A lot of his books really helped me get free, but he said what most people think of as love is really an addictive, needy clinging. Reminds me of a leech. An addictive, needy clinging based on the belief system that I must have this in my life in order to be okay. Doug said something's important. His job defined him. That one almost killed me. See? Book talks about the stage characters. It's my experience at this point in time in my recovery, and it may be different a year from now and in my life, is it's all a big one-act play, and God's the creator is my director, and it shifts and moves and changes. And all I do is I show up each day. I don't know how long the play is going to run on Broadway, but I'll tell you this, the day the damn thing closes, boom, I'm done, I'm gone. Prior to what I'm doing right now, I was CEO of a company up in Dallas, and I walked into work, and I had a job at 8 o'clock, and I'd resigned from 1 at 10, and I drove out the door, and or drove out the gate. The day I drove out the gate, that position was done, and it did not define who I am. Say, I know who I am. I know who I am. I've touched my true self. I take my beingness into my doing. My doing does not define me. I live in a world of impermanence. Hell, you're 15 months ago, I thought I'd be working at Home Depot. That's a God's honest truth. Tony can tell you that. That job was done. This is how God works. That job's done. It'd take about a month. I love to work. I don't know about the rest of you. I like working. I do. It's fun. And I didn't know what I was going to do when I grow up. And, of course, I'm 60 years old. You'd think one would wake up to that pretty soon. But so I did a little consulting work, and then I get a call from a guy that owned a lot of rehabs in Texas, and I think he wants to do a little consulting work with me. And he does, and he offers me a job to be president of his company. And now keep in mind, I'm unemployed. Fortunately, a great thing happened for me is when I was 53 years old, I got to have an experience of what I call getting financially sane. I once again found myself unemployed and had burned through what meager savings I had. And I said, this is enough. Here I am, Groundhog Day again with money. Y'all seen the movie Groundhog Day, right? And I did some inventory, and at the end of the day, what rolled off my pen were two major things around me and money. Here's the first. I thought I was going to win the lotto. Who the hell has to plan for retirement if you're going to win the lotto? The problem was I'd never won the lotto. And the second thing that rolled off my pen is I somehow thought I was a financial planner, although I've had no training in that area. Lo and behold, I submitted myself to a financial planner. By then, I was financially sane. I didn't have to work for 2-3 years if I didn't want to. You know, what a great thing. By the way, I'll throw out a little carrot. Those of you that your ego has driven you into financial insanity, you will have no idea how entrapped you are with fear till you become financially sane. Doug talked about the last amount. I know what it's like to have made all your amends, to be a free man. I know that. I know what it's like to not owe a dime and to see how much fear dominated my life. But back to my story real quick and back to how God works. So he makes me this offer. This was a hell of an offer. So I do this exactly what the big book says. It says in meditation we ask God about each specific matter. 3 days go by. I'm very clear. I'm not supposed to do that. I find myself calling him up and saying, I can't do that. He said, do you mind me asking why? And I said, well, there's two reasons. One is, I will never work for anybody again. And two, I'm not supposed to. And he said, well, what do you think you're supposed to do? And I said, I'm not sure. He said, go for it. So just through a series of events, next thing I know, I'm down in Austin, Texas, and looking for property to buy. And this was a very interesting experience about faith and trust in this power. This was an alcoholic's dream / nightmare. I had a huge suitcase full of cash, and I couldn't get anyone to take it. 4 times in a row this happened. And, you know, you build up and you go look at property and you offer contracts and you do this and you do that and you do it and then it's, nope, this one didn't work and this one didn't work and this one didn't work and this one didn't work. But I was telling someone earlier, I've learned along the way, recovery in life for me is about being a marathon runner, not a sprinter. And one thing I can tell you about me, I keep getting up and I keep running the race. So we just kept moving forward. And then lo and behold, we get sent out to this place right outside of Austin, and incredible, 54 acres, and there's this 5,500 square foot mansion, this beautiful farmhouse, and this lake, and I'd been driving by that area for years, never even knew any of this kind of stuff existed. And so we get there, and the real estate agent apparently thought we were flakes because he had accepted a contract an hour before we got there He told us later, he said, I just didn't think you guys were serious buyers. And so, of course, then we made him an offer. Well, in the state of Texas, you got 48 hours to. The difference was we had money and the other people had blue sky. And in Texas, you got 48 hours to either accept or reject. And 48 hours went by and we got that place. And I moved on to that property on June 13, 2006 and slept in a tent. And my God, here we are 14 months later. It's just incredible. Submitting myself to letting God demonstrate through me what God can do. What a great way to live. I don't have to worry about what it's going to look like. Now, here's the other side of that coin for me. I never ask myself what God's part in the deal is. I get up and do the 35 things in front of me that I'm supposed to do. That makes sense? But, you know, it's like the old alcoholic thing of sit at home and pray and meditate for a job. Well, my experience is you better get your ass out of your house and go look, knock on some doors. Right? There's a spiritual law. God will not do for me what I'm supposed to do for myself. Sometimes I feel like I've had three distinct periods in my recovery, the first 9.5, 10 years. You know, Don carried the message to me. Joe was very instrumental in that message in those first 9.5, 10 years. And it seems to me like I superficially or intellectually processed it, is what it feels like to me. Then I have, it seems like, my second 10 years, where I, once I got out of that nut house, I resubmitted to the first 9 steps 4 times. I had a lot of unwritten inventory and a lot of unfinished amends that I was not aware of. And I was down in Kerrville, Texas, and then I began to start workshops, and that's when Chris Raymer. It's funny, because, see, I knew Chris when he was sitting in meetings whining. You guys don't have that story experience with him. And I know Chris the first time he got up to give a talk and he was sweating bullets and wasn't sure what side the patch should go on or not, you know. And I can't do this. I can't do this. And look at him now. He's an international speaker, for God's sakes. A new stage character for his ego to attach to. I mess with him all the time. Can I speak to Chris Raymer, the international speaker? Yeah. I won't tell you what his response to that is, but see, have fun with this. See? Have fun with it, you know. I took a 3-year break from talking. I have never been enthralled with the sound of my own voice. I just haven't. And in 2003, Joe and I, we did a workshop in Memphis, Tennessee, at about 300 people. And some of you might relate to this. I was probably, I guess I had to be about 21, 22 years sober. And I was sitting there doing that workshop that weekend, and I don't know how many of them I'd done over the years, many. And inside, the way I was experiencing myself and the way you were experiencing me, they were completely different. And I had that voice that said things like, well, if they really knew you, they would never ask you to ask back again. You all know that voice, right? Things are going good. And that was another point in time in which I said, there's something wrong with this. I should feel better inside than what you see me from the outside. And I don't, and it's my responsibility. So through a series of events, one of the things that came out of that was stop speaking. Go inward. I did. Didn't blink an eye. Right? Cancel all. Well, I didn't have many things to cancel. It was an incredible experience for me. This is what I think what happened in terms of getting free of that. Some of you might relate to this. I had done so much work with the steps and several other things that I sought some outside help with this. And so God sends me to this Norwegian woman. She's like 65, 66 years old. One of the most non-judgmental humans I've ever met. And we get to talking. And I'm describing to her what happened to me down in Memphis, and she looks me dead in the eye, and she said, shame. And I said, what? She said, shame. You're describing shame. It's an energy. But you're describing the kind of shame that for whatever reason, your mind's telling you, you don't even deserve to be on the planet. I said, really? See, I don't know about you, but when truth begins to, something in me resonates when I hear a truth for Mark at that time. And I knew what she was saying was the truth. And we went back and looked at that. And I can tell you that that disappeared. That energy completely left me, and the result of that energy completely leaving me is there came a day when I woke up and my insides and outsides were a perfect match. See, what I so love about my life today is there is a perfect match, and what you see is what you get. And if you like that, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine. It does not diminish who I am. It does nothing to who I am. And you can only add to and you cannot take away. If that can happen to me, that can happen to you. I know what it's like to be sober, long time sober, and still operating in fear. To be able to be sitting over there with my pal Tony and to have Sal introduce me and come up here to speak to you all, some of you who I know, most of you who I do not. You know me through my tapes. And to do that with absolutely no fear is an incredible thing. I knew that book was right when it told me I could have that. I knew that book was right when it said you can take a fearless life into your relationships. And you can be authentic and you can be real. And you can take that into work. And you can take that into every single area of your life. Wow. What a deal. Oh, just go to meetings and don't drink. My God. You know? Best years of my life lie ahead of me. Share another little current experience with you all. Some of you have been listening to my tapes. Know what? I have been having a lot of fun with the smoking issue in my life. Someone might say, what the hell has that got to do with alcoholism? Well, watch someone die of lung cancer and you'll see what it has to do. So I'll tell you my current experience with this, because it's still about the power. I'm a real smoker. Not a hard smoker. I'm not a moderate smoker. And I want a cigarette, I'll hurt you. You come to my house and I sponsor you, I don't give a shit if you got emphysema. I'm smoking. I'll smoke on airplanes, in airports, everywhere. I'll cheat, lie, and steal. Last time I quit smoking, relapsed, I didn't go buy 8-pack. I bought about 6 cartons, baby. If I could have lit up 6 at one time, I probably would have. I ain't any different with that shit than I was with vodka, right? If I ever on an intuitive level knew I was going to relapse, I'd call Tony, everyone I knew, I'd liquidate everything I had, and I'd go out and buy as much vodka as I could, and I'd hole up, and I'd get after it. None of this bullshit in between trying to maintain a job, right? So 2 weeks ago Saturday, I'm at the gym working out. One of my stage characters is the jock. I always tell the guys I sponsor, it's about looking, goddammit. Yeah, how you feel is subject to change 1,000 times a day. For God's sakes, it's about looking good, right? I have this problem sometimes when I go in the gym. My mind forgets that my body is 60 years old. So there's a bunch of new exercises out called core strength training shit. And they got medicine balls. And I fell a little asleep while I was at the gym. I started looking at this 25-year-old hard body chick, and she's doing some core stuff with the medicine ball. Looked like something I should try. So I did. And my lower back, a couple times in the middle of that trying, started to say to me, you really should quit now. But because I was asleep and she had a great looking body, I completely ignored it. Zoomed right through it. Finished my workout, went home, everything was fine. Till I woke up Sunday morning. And I went to roll over, and it felt like someone took a baseball bat and just caved me in the back, followed with two branding irons right in my both buttocks. And I said, oh my God. Monday night, 9 o'clock, I was begging a friend of mine to take me to ER. And I got there, and I said, I want the biggest shot of Dilaudid in my ass you can find. Now, this is a guy I've been sponsoring for years, about 8 years sober. He'd never seen me cry. By God, he saw me cry. I said, give me a piece of wood. And he said, what for? I said, because if I bite none, I'm going to bite on your goddamn arm. Just pain, you know. So anyhow, we get the shot, and they want to give you pain meds. I don't do pain meds for several reasons. One, they make me groggy. Two, they make me constipated. I don't like either. So now that what that means, though, those of you who've had this little problem I'm talking about, I didn't realize that every movement I make from coughing to whatever is tied into my lumbar, and that's sciatic. God bless the poor people that live above me, because about every 5 minutes they're hearing, ah! Ah! They must think I must have screwed my brains out last week. I didn't, but God did. I pray a lot, right? Jesus, the pain was unbelievable. And then I get, you know, and I see, I got Don's voice and Joe's and Big Frank's, and they're doing stuff. You know, Don used to, when Don was in pain, he'd go to his place. So I'm in all this excruciating pain, and this voice comes in. Go to your place. Go, no, no, no. So you pray, you breathe. You know, and you can't sleep. I went 5 days, the longest I ever slept for about an hour, because if you fall asleep, move. Oh! You know, it's... finally, I went to my doc, who's been in recovery a long time, and said, we got a little problem here, Jack. And he goes, of course, you know, he laughs a little, and said, well, it's just going to take some time. Yeah, easy for you to say. But anyhow, here I am about 2 weeks later, and it has gotten better. But one of the things that happened to me, I want to go back to that. I'm laying home, it's Wednesday. I just completed all my yearly physical stuff and a CAT scan, and it's all good. And Doc had looked at me, and he said, and he smokes. You know how we are. He's a donkey, right? And he said, look, here's the deal. You have avoided the bullet, but I don't think you're going to avoid it if you continue. Now, he said, you know, do what you want. You know, I said, okay. So he wrote me a script for Shantex. That's a new thing they have out. Help a little bit, blocking nicotine. And I had absolutely no intention of quitting smoking because I'm a real smoker. And I went ahead and ordered that stuff. But I'm laying in my bed on Tuesday. And I don't know why I started thinking this, but this is the thought that came. This is really about the second step. But I said, you know what, God? When it comes to my physically body, I obviously am completely insane. And the reason I'm completely insane is I would have to be insane to light up a cigarette like a blowtorch that I know is going to kill me and take 400 hits a day. And I said, I know that I'm insane, and I know something else. I can't get myself out. So here's the deal. You want to restore me to sanity? So be it. If not, I'm going to smoke. It's now in your hands. Have a good day. That's the extent of it. I don't know why. I haven't smoked since last week ago Wednesday. That's how it works. That's how the power works. And by the way, I have no judgments about you hard smokers. You know, but I see, that's why I love the steps. I love the program. I love everything about it. And ladies and gentlemen, there's no end to this. You know, God willing, I guess 60, 65, 70 days, I've gone 25 years without drinking. You know what? The book says, Mark, the best years of your life lie ahead of you. You can take it to the bank. I'm excited about that. God only knows what's going to be in store for me. But there's this power. I've reworked 1 through 9 once a year. Submit to that on a regular basis. Why? Because I fall asleep sometimes. That's why. Because my ego rebuilds. And I know that. And you can't defeat your ego. It takes the best of you. See, the very things you can use, the tools of 10 and 11, your ego will take and use against you. That's why I resubmit. I'm not saying you have to do it. I'm just telling you what I do. I like the effect produced. And so I've already done that this year. Not surprising. A lot of new and exciting things going on in my life. I want to thank you all for taking the time to listen to me rattle on a little bit this evening. Those of you I get a chance to see in December, I'm excited about coming out and doing that retreat. I haven't done one in 3.5-4 years, and I got a lot of shit to download to you. So I'm looking forward to that. That's all I got. God bless you. I love you.